Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Tuesday pre-play-in edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast, presented as always by WinBet. Make sure you're using winbet.com if you're placing any wagers on the play-in tournament. Nick Whalen here with Alex Barutha. Alex, we're coming in red hot. We just finished up our inaugural RotoWire WNBA fantasy draft. We have a nice deal with ESPN. They're really pushing the WNBA fantasy game for the first time this season. Our man Chris Benzine has been all over it, doing rankings, projections, articles. That actually had a pretty good time, you know, running through that WNBA draft, and we're going to play out the league. Nice to be back in the saddle because we won't be doing NBA drafts for another, 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, it is good to get another draft in. It will, you know, part of the reason fantasy is nice is because it will help you learn certain players. Like, if you want to learn more about baseball, do a baseball draft. You want to learn more about WNBA, do that. So yeah. I mean, we cover it for a living, not to the extent that, like, you know, Chris does and other guys of the company, but it will be nice to actually have stakes to some extent of our coverage.
Yeah, big time. And it's very cool actually to see ESPN pushing it as much as they have, because I think there is an untapped market there. You know, it's never going to reach fantasy football or even fantasy baseball level of popularity, but you know, it's a great way obviously to kind of push more people to stay engaged with the league. But I'm excited. We got a lot to get to, some news items for the play-in tournament, a couple games, of course, tipping off tonight, beginning with that Cavs and Nets showdown with the 7 seed on the East, or in the East, I should say, on the line. We'll talk a little bit about some of the updated odds up at the DraftKings Sportsbook. There are a ton of ways to bet the playoffs, and you'll find those at really any book. But we'll start to look ahead at the updates in title odds, some of the series odds that are posted. I want to talk to you about the easiest path to the finals now that we have most of the field set in each conference. But we'll back up and we'll start with some of the bigger news items of the day. And we have two very cryptic, very important injury updates regarding Stephen Curry and Luka Doncic. And really, man, at this point, I would not be surprised if one or maybe even both of those guys are unavailable to begin their respective series.
It's tough, man. The Steph Curry update is concerning. If you have any sort of bet on the Warriors, I mean, I there was a point in the year where people were like, oh, the Warriors might do it. I think a lot of people probably placed bets on them at some point. This is tough, man. I don't know because they're starting off against Denver. If Curry's not healthy for that, I think Jokic might tear them apart anyway, but. They don't stand a chance if Curry's not healthy. You know, Jordan Poole's been amazing. Like, we have to give credit to Jordan Poole. He's been putting up Steph Curry type numbers, but you're gonna need them both if you want to win that series.
Yeah, I feel like this has gone undercovered, right? Like a month ago when Curry went out, he, like the last thing I remember hearing from him was he was trying to speak into existence that he would return before the end of the regular season. And the regular season, just so you know, ended on Sunday. And Stephen Curry did not play in any of the Warriors' final games. There's been virtually no update until today. And even today's update is something of a non-update. And I think with both Curry and Doncic, there is a little bit of gamesmanship. I don't think either team wants to tip their hand, you know, when we're still like 4 or 5 days away from those series tipping off. But this is a massive, massive, massive concern for Golden State. Right. Because I think if Stephen Curry is not, obviously, if he's not playing, you know, I'm picking Denver in that series. And if he's, you know, if he's not at 100%, I think that makes it maybe more of a true 50-50. And that's even with, you know, it sounding like we're not going to see Michael Porter or Jamal Murray at any point this season. That was the big thing for me, was like, you know, if those guys came back, Denver was kind of in that Clippers territory of this sleeping giant that is missing, you know, two of its three best players. Even without that, the Warriors just have not been the Warriors without Stephen Curry. And obviously that's been the case for the last decade. And even if Curry does come back and he looks like himself, I think there's still some concern with the fact that Curry, Klay, and Draymond have played less than two games together since the end of the 2019 finals. You're trying to kind of rekindle that chemistry on the fly in a do or die series against a good team in Denver. It's kind of amazing to me, like how far the Warriors have fallen, and obviously injuries are the main reason, but this team was like, you know, what at the, what, 30, 40 game mark, they were the odds on favorite. Curry was running away with the MVP. And you know, the way that the narrative has completely flipped over the second half is astonishing.
Yeah. I mean, once Curry hit that 3-point record, his season just kind of fell off. Very like harsh, a very harsh point in time after that for his like efficiency. I just flipped open the Warriors numbers, their point differential with Curry off the court, but Poole, Draymond, and Klay on the court. And that crew has played 343 possessions together for a minus 16 per 100 possession point differential. Like truly bottom of the barrel NBA caliber numbers with Curry off the court and those three guys on. So listen, I mean, playoffs are different, but they just can't win that series without Curry. The fact that his update is like could return to practice soon, like he might be able to try to be on the court soon, is the potentially. Not great. Yeah, potentially.
Yeah, right. And you'd like to think if the situation was more encouraging, you'd think they would put out a more encouraging update. Like the Warriors have never really been one of those teams that's been super cagey with their injury updates. I mean, they ruled James Wiseman out well before they ever needed to do that. So that tells me that there's some real worry about Curry's status here. So again, I feel like this has gone a little bit undercovered. And then on the Doncic front, you know, if you watch that, like, I don't even like to say this out loud because of how bad it would be, but like, I thought there was a chance he might've torn his Achilles with how that injury looked, you know, kind of non-contact, the way he just like immediately started reaching for the bottom of the calf. And thankfully, it looks like it is just a run-of-the-mill calf strain, if you will. But I don't know. I mean, like that's still an injury that could oftentimes cause guys to miss 2 or 3 weeks. So in that way, you know, the fact that Dallas is above the play-in tournament and they do get essentially an extra 6 days before their series begins, that is nice. But kind of in the same boat as Curry, like even if Doncic is back for game one or he's back for game two, I mean, the chances that he's 100%, and I think – Dallas almost needs him more than Golden State needs Curry with how much they rely on him. You know, if he's going through game one or game two of that series at 75-80%, I think that's enough for me where it probably tips things in favor of Utah.
Yeah, I mean, am I remembering this wrong, or wasn't Kevin Durant's injury in the finals a calf injury before he tore his Achilles?
It was a calf injury, and then he came back and tore it, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Bad vibes. Yeah, I mean, I think so. Obviously, the Warriors have more organizational like clout and competence than the Mavericks do, but I think the Mavericks, I mean, this year they're very well coached. I think we have to give Jason Kidd credit. They've also been pretty good. Like the Jalen Brunson lineups have been pretty good. He's done a very good job. I mean, people are talking about he's going to get a max contract. Whether or not that's true, the fact that he's in that discussion, I think, is warranted partially by
how well they still manage to play when Doncic is off the court. So I actually think the Warriors might be hurt more than the Mavericks. But neither of these teams are going up against the Warriors are going up against Denver, and obviously Jokic is amazing in the MVP, but it's not like everyone else on Denver is that great. And then the Mavericks are going up against Utah, who is just I have no idea what to think about them. In theory, they're a very good team. Like, they've proven to be good before, but it's come playoff time, things just keep falling apart for them. Like, Phoenix came down from 15 points back the other day.
Yep.
Maybe that's more of a Chris Paul thing than Utah thing, but yeah.
I mean, we saw this team lose to the Clippers, who lost Kawhi Leonard a torn ACL. So yeah, maybe in some weird way, this is almost like putting more pressure on the Jazz. Like, let's say Doncic just ruled out for the first three games of the series. It's like, if you're Utah, it's like, oh my God, we absolutely have to win these games now. I think you're right. Maybe I went a little too far. Like, I don't think if those guys miss a game or two to begin a series, it's not curtains. Which of those teams do you think would have a better chance? Like, let's just use the hypothetical and say Curry misses the entire round one, Doncic misses the entire round one. Which team do you think has a better chance to advance in that scenario?
Dallas.
I think Dallas.
And is that just a hedge against Utah? Because, look, I like Jalen Brunson too. I don't think he's a max guy, but it's a little bleak. Like, that, you're relying an awful lot on, Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah.
To essentially win you that series against a team that, for as shaky as they've been, has two All-NBA guys in Mitchell and Gobert.
It's sort of a hedge. I mean, just first of all, on the surface, the numbers with the Mavericks numbers without Doncic are infinitely better than the Warriors numbers without Curry. So, I mean, some of that's going to come down to shooting percentage luck, stuff like that. I also just think Dallas this year has proven to be they've defended extremely well. I don't think they'll be easy to go against. They're a scrappy defensive team. That helps. I don't know, man. And then at the other hand, Utah doesn't have Donovan Mitchell has played an MVP in his past two playoff series or the past 2 years of playoffs that he's been in. But I'm still way more scared of Jokic, even though Utah is a more balanced team. The Nuggets finished with only one fewer win than Utah, despite the lack of a great cast around them. So I think it's the combination of the numbers with Curry and Doncic off the court, combined with who they're going up against.
All right, we got a two-game slate in the NBA tonight. Play-in matchups between the 7 and 8 seeds in both conferences. Let's make some picks on Monkey Knife Fight. You can use our promo code RWNBA. That'll get you a free $10 NBA contest ticket. You can go on Monkey Knife Fight and use that to win cash tonight. All right, we're going to a 2x2 contest tonight. So we're looking at 3.6x our buy-in amount if we go 2 for 2 on our picks. And we're going to use the two biggest names on this slate. We're going to start with Kevin Durant. 32.5 points is his more or less. The Nets, of course, going up against the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm on the fence about this one, but I think I'm going to lean toward less. Obviously, KD capable of going over that number on any given night. But the Nets have climbed to 9.5 point favorites in this game. They will have Seth Curry back. They will have Goran Dragic back. That line implies that, maybe the odds makers see them running away with this game in the second half, and we don't have KD playing 43 minutes. Obviously, Kyrie Irving going to be a big factor. I think he could get 30 plus tonight. And the Nets should be able to win this game without Durant having to play too much hero ball. Keep in mind, KD went under this number in 3 of his last 4 games to conclude the regular season. So I'm going less. I don't feel great about it, but we're going less on 32.5 for Kevin Durant. That brings us to the late game, the Clippers going up against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Paul George, 28.5 points is his line on Monkey Knife Fight. I'm going more here. As reliant as the Nets are on Kevin Durant, the Clippers might be even more reliant on Paul George. He played 5 games before the end of the season, should be pretty much fully back up to speed at this point. Minnesota's been fantastic on offense. They've been the number one offense in basketball since January 1st, but still not a fantastic defense. Good, not great on that end of the court. They have a few guys to throw at Paul George, but I think the Clippers make a point to get Paul George going early in this game. I think we could see him play close to, if not exceed, 40 minutes, should take 20 plus shots. Encouragingly, he got to the line a bunch after returning from that long injury absence. And more than anything, the Clippers are going to go hard here. They do not want to fall to the potential eight spot and be looking at a matchup against the Phoenix Suns. So I think we see a pretty explosive night from Paul George. I think the Clippers give the Timberwolves everything they can handle in this one. So to recap, we're going less on 32.5 for Kevin Durant. We're going more on 28.5 points for Paul George. There we go. We go 2 for 2. We're looking at 3.6x our buy-in amount. And make sure you're using our promo code RWNBA. You'll get that free $10 NBA credit on Monkey Knife Fight. So the Warriors, you know, Curry situation aside, are not viewed as, you know, quite as ferocious of an opponent as we thought they were around midseason. But I think Dallas, prior to the Doncic injury, was viewed as that potential team that could sneak through. And all of a sudden, you know, we're looking at a really close series. Would be in round two against the Phoenix Suns. But, you know, I think both of these injuries open things up maybe even more for the Phoenix Suns. The East is now kind of the old West. And like, I can't remember, I was trying to go through, like, when is the last time that things have been lined up so perfectly for one team in a specific conference as they are right now for the Phoenix Suns? And I think I settled on, like, back in 2014-15. So LeBron's first year back in Cleveland after leaving Miami. The East was really, really weak at that point. You know, the Heat were obviously no longer the Heat. Dwayne Wade was getting injured. There really wasn't another challenger to that Cavs team in the East. And then in the West, you had, you know, the 73-win Warriors. No, I'm looking at 2015-16. You had the 73-win Warriors, the 67-win Spurs, which are, you know, very much forgotten about because of what Golden State did. You had the Thunder, who were still very much a factor. That was when KD was there. The Clippers were still in their heyday with Chris Paul. Portland was up and coming. Like, that to me kind of feels like how the East feels now, whereas the Cavs just had this ultra clear path, you know, to waltz their way back to the NBA Finals. And it really feels like that's how it's shaping up right now for the Phoenix Suns. Like, it's almost impossible, you know, barring an injury on the Phoenix side, it's almost impossible for me to imagine them getting tripped up.
I agree with you, man. You can still get them plus 110 to win the conference. That's on DraftKings. I would do that. I agree, man, because, you know, they're going to go up against, in the second round, they're going up against Dallas or Utah. Very both beatable teams. And then they're probably, they're going to go up against Memphis. Even if Denver advances, I don't know. Denver Memphis is going to be an interesting series. I'm just with you, man. I think they're just going to just cruise through. There's a chance they lose, like, what, two games on the way to the two, three games on the way to the Western Conference Finals or on the way to the NBA Finals.
Sure. I mean, you're looking at a pretty advantageous matchup. I think the one potential pitfall is, like, if you end up playing the Clippers or the Timberwolves in the 1-8, I don't know that that's a guaranteed sweep. I think both of those teams have enough to maybe steal a game. But you're probably not looking at a super tough series there. You know, it's not a pushover, but it's somewhere in the middle. And, you know, if you're asking me straight up, like, Suns versus Team X, I would say there are, given what we know right now, especially about the Warriors, there are at least five teams in the East that I would say have a better chance to push or beat the Suns than any other team in the West. You know, I think you start comparing, like, you know, the Sixers and the Grizzlies, or, you know, maybe Miami and Memphis, like, then they could get a little closer. But I mean, I think Miami, Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, and Brooklyn all have a better chance to beat the Suns than Memphis or Golden State or Dallas or Utah or Denver.
I think so. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
And maybe that's a disrespect to Memphis, because the Grizzlies have a better record than every team I just named out of the East.
I know, but I think I'm with you where it's like, for some reason, I don't quite believe it yet. Even though they continue to just prove me wrong, like, night after night, Morant goes out, it doesn't matter. They continue to win. Some of it's like, I feel like I haven't, they're hard to pick because you haven't, like, seen it yet. Dylan, like, last year, they were great against the Warriors. They pushed the Jazz, even though, I think they only won one game against the Jazz, right? But I feel like they pushed them.
Morant won game one, I believe, yeah.
Yeah, Morant clearly wasn't scared going up against Gobert. Dylan Brooks had an awesome series, and he's been back for a while for them. And then I feel like I continue to disrespect them for almost no reason other than they only have one star player who I don't think you can like necessarily game plan against him, but I think it's just if you manage to shut him off, it's going to be tough for them, even though they, even though again, they proved to be able to play well without him. It's hard for me to explain why I just don't quite think they'll really challenge Phoenix yet.
Yeah, it's really hard to find a comparison for a team like this because, you know, I was thinking like, well, do they remind me of like the Lowry DeRozan Raptors where you're like, yeah, I like the pieces. You have these guys who are both playing really well. They're deep. They have some young guys that you like. But at the end of the day, you know, there was plenty of evidence, especially by the time we got to like 2016, 2017, 2018, as to what was going to happen. Like the counter argument for the Grizzlies is like, look, we've never been here before. Like you can't say we're going to come up short because we haven't done that. But the counter argument to the counter argument is, well, we also haven't seen you win a playoff series with this group. So it's kind of a prove it scenario for me with Memphis. But yeah, I mean, the rest of the conference is stacking up well for them, I think, to make a run. You know, we're talking about how Golden State is weakened. Dallas could potentially be weakened. You know, not only is the road opening up for Phoenix, I think, to get back to the finals, but it's potentially opening up for Memphis to also meet Phoenix in the Western Conference.
I mean, I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, cause they're going to get through that first round series. Pretty confident in that. And then, you know, I feel like they beat the Warriors. It's tough. You know, Steph Curry can always go nuclear if he's available. Mm-hmm. And then if they play Denver, I feel like Denver is pretty beatable. I mean, Denver, talk about, you know, having no options, you know, around Jokic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's, right now, I do think it is shaping up for Western Conference just to be like the one and the two seed between Phoenix and Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't want to keep like dogging on Memphis, but like I wouldn't be shocked if Memphis gets pushed by Minnesota or the Clippers in round one. You know, just kind of a, you know, neither team, I guess, has kind of been in that situation. You know, this version of the Clippers without Kawhi, you know, Minnesota and this version of the Grizzlies basically have the same level of playoff experience, right? Obviously Memphis has the regular season track record to back it up, but I wouldn't be shocked, you know, if they don't run through, you know, their way to the Western Conference, despite their record. I want to take a look at the paths in the Eastern Conference, which it's going to depend what happens tonight, largely, in that first game between the Nets and the Cavs. But I mean, if the Nets win, and again, they're heavy favorites, that number climbed up to 9.5. I think it's down to Nets -9. Right now at DraftKings. But if they finish at the seven, we're of course looking at Brooklyn, Boston, Milwaukee gets the three. In that scenario, I think things set up really, really well for the Miami Heat, who then get the winner of Philly, Toronto. And they also get a pretty advantageous first round matchup, right? I mean, you're talking either the Cavs, the Hawks, or the Hornets, which in this Eastern Conference is as easy as it gets. So you have a very winnable first round series. In my mind, you know, two teams that have pretty defined weaknesses in Philly and Toronto in round two. And then you're dodging all but one of Milwaukee, Boston, and Brooklyn. And again, that's the scenario with the Nets winning tonight and getting the seven.
Yeah. They have the easiest path in the East for sure, especially if they end up with a Charlotte in the first round, which would be hilarious. Yeah, you can get them at they're tied with Boston at +425 to win the Eastern Conference, which I think if you're just considering like who am I betting for value based on easiest path, I think it's the Heat. Yeah, I'm that second round series will be tough, I think, between Philly and Toronto. I mean, they at least have Bam to deal with Embiid. And they have Butler to presumably put on Harden. So I think that's good for them. Toronto, I mean, they should be able to beat Toronto, but they continue. I mean, Toronto is one of the best coach teams in the league. They're scrappy. They play tough defensively. They space the floor. They're passing all over the place. Mm-hmm. But yeah, their path is definitely the easiest.
I will say, and there's a little bit of extrapolation to be done. It's not a, you know, perfect reading here, but the scenario with the lowest odds when you're looking at the Sixers Raptors series, like the exact series score. So, you know, like Sixers win in seven or whatever. Sixers in seven is the most likely outcome according to the odds. That's at +340. And keep in mind at +350 is the Sixers in five. So it's not like this is viewed as just a, you know, a 50-50 type of series, but I think Toronto's going to push Philly. You know, I think especially if the Raptors can take one of the first two games at Philly then has to go to Toronto without Matisse Thybulle, And I don't want to make Matisse Thybulle sound like he's like 1997 Michael Jordan, but that's kind of a big deal, right? It's a distraction. It's a big deal. It's definitely your best defender and somebody who you would absolutely want to have specifically against this Raptors team that has all these wings. I don't know. I think especially if Philly drops one of those first two, things are going to get really tight when that heads to Toronto and the pressure turns up. I mean, you have an all-time bad playoff performer in James Harden. You have the James Harden of coaches in Doc Rivers. you could just totally see that whole scenario unfolding.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about what teams have the pressure on them, Philly has as much pressure on them in the East as like Utah does in the West, right?
I think so, but I think the key difference is that at this point, is there anybody who really thinks like it's title or bust for the Jazz? Like if you think the Jazz are going to win the title this year, good for you. You know, that's all well and good. That's not going to happen. Like there are a lot of people that have legit title expectations for the Sixers team, including the Sixers themselves, including that front office. So like, you know, I think like if Boston plays Brooklyn and loses, it's like, all right, we had a great season. We got a really tough draw. We just got beat by two of the best players in the world.
Right.
This is especially if Philly were to lose in round one, like if Philly makes the conference finals and loses to Milwaukee or loses to Brooklyn or whoever, you know, you call it what it is. You just a really stacked conference. But I think you have a series that's just losable enough that there's going to be enough pressure where they have to play well or the panic meter is just going to keep rising with each passing game.
Yeah, if you think about like, you know, the teams with like what are their possible excuses or Philly, it's tough for them because they do have the talent, right? Like, I don't think there's anybody, I don't know who doesn't believe that they have NBA championship talent on the roster between James Harden, Embiid, and not a bad supporting cast. I mean, Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey as your number three and four options is pretty good.
That's really
good. Yes. So, like, what do you even say if you lose to Toronto? What is your
excuse? It's the same thing that they said when they had Jimmy Butler and they had JJ Redick. I honestly, I don't really remember what the excuse was back then. I don't know. Embiid's banged up. I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. And it feels like, I don't know, most people I've talked to, like, I think a couple weeks ago, maybe even 3 or 4 weeks ago when Harden was playing really well when he first got there, you know, it was like, man, this Philly team, they're going to be really tough. And I feel like everything you listen to and everything you hear is Milwaukee, Boston, Miami, and the Nets. Like, those are the teams to worry about. And it feels like Philly's definitely in that discussion, but you don't really hear them mentioned as the team that anyone fears most anymore.
Yeah. Well, and this is just complicated by the fact that Philly basically has to make a decision on a James Harden extension, which I assume is basically already in place. But
yeah, I think so.
I love that they're going up against Toronto specifically because Toronto being coached by Nick Nurse, it's kind of a bizarre team on the floor because they play so small. There's so many wings. Those wings are super versatile. But obviously Nick Nurse, this has been documented a ton, is just not afraid to experiment. He's almost like the Ty Lue of the East where it's like, yeah, he'll play a box in one against Curry. Doesn't matter. You know, maybe they'll do like what the Bucks used to do against Harden and probably still would do, which is just sit on his left hand.
Right.
Just do not let him go left. Like guard him from like literally next to him if you have to. I'm sure they'll double Embiid all the time and make him make those tough passes. And so I think it will be really interesting to see like one of the best game-to-game, quarter-to-quarter adjusters in Nick Nurse, who's willing to try a ton of stuff, versus Doc Rivers, who very often just slams his head against the wall and hope things start to work because he just has talent on the roster. Mm-hmm.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I'm looking at the DraftKings series prices, which is essentially the money line for who wins the series. Philly's minus 180, Toronto plus 150. That is the tightest by far of the four series that we have locked in. Golden State minus 250, Denver plus 210. Utah, interestingly, minus 280, Dallas plus 210. That to me implies that something or somebody knows something not good about Luka Doncic's calf. Then we have Milwaukee minus 1,000 against the Bulls. I mean, I don't want to like talk bad about the Bulls. Fun season, but like pretty amazing that 2 months ago, I think this would have been viewed as like a knockdown, drag out, great series. And now it's just like, yeah, Bucks in four or five, no question.
Well, they can't defend anybody. And, you know, everyone knows about their record against top teams, which is awful. Yeah. I don't remember the
Bucks
exact
are a particularly bad matchup for them too.
Yeah. Patrick Williams is going to get the Giannis assignment. I feel sorry for him.
Poor man.
Yeah. I mean, Lopez and, you know, I don't know, man. I don't even know what they're going to do. Yeah, Vucevic is going to stretch the floor, which is at least a little interesting, making, you know, like the Lopez come out. But at the same time, the Bucks just decimated the Bulls the other day. Lopez went for like a season high 28 points or something. So it just, yeah, could easily be a sweep. You know, if you're going to bet on that series, just bet on a series correct score, total games, something like that.
So looking at the NBA title odds or the conference winner odds, whichever you prefer, is there a certain value that you like most? I think you mentioned it earlier with the Suns at plus 110. I do not see that number climbing any higher between now and mid-June. I think this is the best value you're going to get. Still Milwaukee at plus 250. I mean, both of these teams have the lowest odds in their respective conferences, but I still think those are pretty decent odds. Is there any other bet that you like that jumps out? It kind of feels to me like there's not a true long shot that we could be keeping an eye on right now, given the developments with Doncic, especially.
I mean, we both think Suns and Grizzlies have like strong paths, and you could just bet Suns Grizzlies to make the Western Conference Finals and play each other at plus 265, which I think is kind of interesting there. Like if you're just playing the paths, you know, I think that makes sense. Same thing for the East. I mean, if you want to just go like, you know, like if you're just picking basically sides of the bracket, you know, Bucks are going to get through the first round. I think they would beat Boston or Brooklyn. So you could just go ahead if you want to bet Bucks Heat Eastern Conference Finals. That's plus 350.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's the one I'm looking at too. I mean, you could do Nets Heat at plus 500. You could do Celtics Heat at plus 550. I think I'm starting to feel really good about Miami, and this is assuming that the Nets win tonight, which to me is not a lock, is it? I mean, how confident are you that Brooklyn gets this done and grabs a seven?
I'm pretty confident. I think, you know, the Cavaliers' like main advantage, like their kind of bread and butter is their like rim protection, right? Even without Jared Allen, it's like, well, we got Mobley protecting the rim. That doesn't really matter when you're going up against Brooklyn because they just shoot 50% on mid-range jumpers. So they're going to just launch a ton of threes. And if they burn you, like if you try to funnel the Nets towards the rim, which I think is the right thing to do, they're just going to shoot. They're going to kill you with mid-range jumpers. Like Durant and Irving are unstoppable there. They're just going to commit Bruce Brown to using all of his energy to guard Darius Garland. And the Cavs aren't even a good rebounding team, right? They're a bad defensive rebounding team. Yep. And you have one of the best offensive rebounders in the NBA on Brooklyn and Andre Drummond. So I just think Nets are going to end up with a ton of extra possessions. Those get funneled to the best mid-range shooters, which doesn't, you know, I'm pretty confident the Nets are going to win.
So counterpoint, there was a story on cleveland.com today that Darius Garland has been attached at the hip to Rajon Rondo, and Rondo has been mentoring him heading into this play-in, and Garland thinks they're going to win. So does that change your opinion?
That actually makes me, my opinion is now stronger. Actually, I'm more firmly entrenched in my belief than ever.
Speaking of Rondo, by the way, I saw someone throw out like a semi hot take that LeBron would want Rondo to coach the Lakers. And like, sadly, I feel like there's like a 15% chance that that could happen.
Yeah. It feels. Yeah.
I'd rather that than Mark Jackson.
Yeah, probably.
All right, let's get to five. Importantly, on a team like Phoenix, you have two guys who could very easily win this award for very different reasons. But we have Devin Booker installed as the finals MVP favorite heading into the postseason. He's at plus 550, Giannis 6-1. I'm not going to read all the odds, but in order, the next few are Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Ja Morant, Joel Embiid, Jason Tatum, Kyrie, and Jimmy Butler. Those 10 are all under 20-1, and then of course a host of names with higher odds. It all makes sense. You know, I think it's somewhat hard to find value here, mostly because of the history of how finals MVP goes. I mean, there are a few very notable exceptions. For example, I have no idea what Andre Iguodala's finals MVP odds were in 2015 heading into the playoffs. You probably could have got him at like, I don't know, 70-1. And if you did, good for you. But overwhelmingly, it's the best player on the team that ends up winning the finals, right? And that limits the field, you know, pretty severely. So, I mean, to me, I don't know if I would bet anybody other than Booker, Giannis, Chris Paul, or Kevin Durant. I mean, maybe you could throw in a sprinkle on Jason Tatum at 15-1 if you're really high on the Celtics. But I think once you get beyond that group of 10 that I read at the top, like, in what scenario is Jaylen Brown winning finals MVP? You know, like how much would he have to outplay Jason Tatum? And, you know, the Celtics are obviously winning the title in that scenario. Like, you kind of start to talk yourself into circles, and there's really only so many guys that have a legitimate chance.
I don't like the Booker bet. The Booker versus Chris Paul thing, I feel like you're splitting votes.
Yes. I would lean Chris Paul.
Yeah, I think it's better value. I just think it's a bad bet, honestly. Like the Devin Booker, you know, Devin Booker is going to get MVP votes. He's going to end up very high on all NBA. It's kind of bizarre because I feel like all of the discourse around, you know, for years now, or the past 2 years, what the difference in the Suns have been was Chris Paul coming to the team. And all everybody does is praise Chris Paul and how good he's helped make the team and how well he's playing and how he dominates the game. And he's a floor general and he's just amazing and he's the difference maker. But then anytime anyone talks about any award, it's like, oh, well, Devin Booker. Like, oh, who gets the MVP votes for someone on Phoenix has to get MVP votes because they have 64 wins. Oh, it's Devin Booker. But anytime anyone just like in general talks about the Suns, they're like, well, Chris Paul has done there has been awesome. So I don't really get like what's happening there. I don't get why we're suddenly, yeah. I don't get why that's a thing.
Well, this is how I feel about Monty Williams, coach of the year. So I don't know, maybe can we bet him to win finals MVP? Maybe they'll give him that too. I mean, I think it's Chris Paul just because I feel like we had this exact same discussion last year, right? Where I think it's a lifetime achievement award for Chris Paul. Like Chris Paul winning the finals is a bigger deal than Devin Booker winning the finals, given their ages, even though Devin Booker has taken a leap even from last year. And I think has been more important to this team than he was a season ago when he was still very important then. But I think the fact that they got there and lost, Chris Paul was banged up again. You're almost doubling down on last year's narrative where I think Booker could have the better numbers, but I think the narrative is going to be so strong in favor of Chris Paul that if the Suns win, I think that's where most voters lean. You know, as long as it's not a massive washout and Chris Paul, like if Chris Paul averages 12 points a game and 8 assists and kind of struggles, but they win, and Devin Booker averages 38 a game on 55% shooting, like in that scenario, he's going to win. But you also have to think, like, if Phoenix is knocking off a really good team to win the finals and avenge last season's loss, Chris Paul is probably going to play really well in that series.
Yeah, I think people are just assuming, yeah, if someone's going to have a big series, it's going to be Devin Booker. Maybe.
I don't know. Like Chris Paul could also average like 19 and 13. Why is that so crazy with like 2.5 steals? And like 2 turnovers, because he's been like 10 assists and 2 turnovers all year. So it's like, again, I wouldn't bet either of those two for finals MVP right now, because I feel like that there's like a 50-50 chance that either one of them wins. And I feel like there's just not value. It's like you're comparing that to betting like Giannis. What's the scenario that like Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday? Like it's possible. Yeah. Same with like Curry. Like I would rather bet Curry than Devin Booker or Chris Paul, just because if the Warriors win the finals, it's just going to be because of Steph Curry. Like people are going to say, oh, well, maybe Klay Thompson goes off. Maybe, but it's not like they're not 50-50 in the same way, you know, running the team and as like Chris Paul and Devin Booker.
It would be very, very funny, however, if the Warriors win, Steph gets his 4th ring and somehow goes 0-for-4 on finals MVPs.
Yeah, man.
I don't see that happening. I mean, it's happened once without Kevin Durant on the roster, but that was a unique scenario where that Cavs team, you know, had its second and third best players, didn't play in the finals. Dellavedova was in the hospital halfway through the series. That's probably not happening again. I don't love Curry at 11-1. I'd like a little bit longer odds for me to take that. The one guy further down who does jump out, and I don't love this, and I think these odds are actually very responsible given the circumstances. I think this guy could be listed at 20-1 based on name value, and it's interesting that he's not. But James Harden's at 45-1.
I know.
He has the same odds as Chris Middleton. James Harden has worse odds to win finals MVP than Marcus Smart or Kyle Lowry or Tyler Hero or DeAndre Ayton. Like that, or Donovan Mitchell has higher odds than Harden. Like I get the logic that this is Embiid's season, it's Embiid's team. If they win, he's getting it. And I agree with that, but I mean, James Harden is the guy that has the MVP. He's the guy that has multiple top 5, top 3 finishes in regular season MVP. I don't know. I mean, like, there's maybe, like, if you really want to stretch it and you want to say that James Harden completely reverses everything that he's done to his, you know, in his career to date and has this, like, amazing final series and, you know, bucks the narrative that he's not a great playoff player, you know, maybe you could spin that yarn, but I'm just surprised that he's listed that low.
I'm with you 100%
on pure value. That's $20 to $920. Yeah, because if Embiid plays average, like if Embiid is in the finals and is basically just putting up his normal Embiid numbers, you know, the other team's doing a good job of containing him to an extent, and Harden comes in and puts up his, you know, basically his MVP caliber numbers from years ago, then who was really more important in that series? It was Harden stepping up. And like, should you partially be awarded finals MVP because you've been so bad in other playoff series that the fact that you're playing very well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I don't think that should necessarily be the case. But again, I think, yeah, you just look at the other names that are in that range. You know, it's Mikal Bridges is 50-1 and Harden's 45-1. Like, what is the, again, what are the scenarios that you're talking about that would lead to Andrew Wiggins at 55-1 to win finals MVP compared to James Harden?
Yeah, I think we're both making the same case, which is, would I bet real money on this? No, but relative to everyone else in that range from 20-1 all the way down to 55-1, Harden is the one guy I think that really stands out. And you know, the odds don't match the name value or the past production or what we at least know that he's capable of in the regular season. And again, you know, in the narrative that we're laying out, Harden is basically doing something that we've never seen him do in the playoffs on the biggest stage, presumably against a really good team, you know, likely the Phoenix Suns. It's unlikely, but 45-1, I think in terms of value, there is something there. You know, I think right now, Luka to me is probably a cross off at 30-1. The one thing you could say there is if he is healthy and the Mavericks somehow do make it to the finals, there's no other guy who's getting it. You know, he's on that short list of like, there's literally no one else on the team who could get it.
Yeah, 100%. It's a tough time to bet him. And I'm sure his odds would be shorter if we knew he was healthy, but I don't know if they'd be a lot shorter because like people love Luka and I'm sure they eventually he'll make it to the finals. I wouldn't, not this year. I just wouldn't, not this year.
One that I do kind of like and would consider throwing a little bit of coin on is Bam Adebayo at 30-1. I think if you really like the Heat, and we've already spent a decent amount of time laying out how their path could be pretty friendly, at least to the East Finals. If you like Miami to get back to the finals, you know, Jimmy Butler's at 18-1, Bam's at 30-1. I think it's pretty easy to see a narrative where, let's say it's Suns Heat and Bam Adebayo, you know, maybe he's not the leading scorer, but he averages like, you know, 18 points, 14 rebounds, you know, has a couple big time defensive plays, much like he did in that final series against the Lakers before he got hurt. Like, to me, it's kind of easy to see that narrative evolving of, yeah, Jimmy Butler's the best player, he's the heart and soul, but Bam Adebayo is actually the most important player.
Yes, I think, I mean, Hero at 35-1 is a little intriguing as well. I mean, I'd rather bet that than Lowry at 40-1. I think so. Sometimes this is kind of interesting to me because this one would be hard to choose between like these three at whatever values, Adebayo, Butler, and Hero. But if we're thinking about, if we really think the Suns are making the NBA Finals and that the Heat are going to go up against the Suns, then I think Adebayo versus Ayton is a kind of a tough matchup in terms of it may be tough for Adebayo to really get his numbers. And I don't think he's going to get credit for like slowing down DeAndre Ayton. While on the other hand, if Jimmy Butler slows down Devin Booker and also puts up very good numbers, he's going to get a ton of credit. Like, oh, he stopped Devin Booker, the best player on the Suns. That's almost like the Iguodala argument.
Exactly.
So I think Adebayo is, I mean, 30-1 odds. I can't really argue against like that. But if we're talking about like for sure the Suns are in the finals, then I think I would have to go with Jimmy Butler still at 18-1.
All right, so let's finish out with some picks. We'll try to update our finals picks as much as we can, you know, weekly or bi-weekly or maybe series by series. But as we stand right now, you know, play-in games have not yet commenced. But knowing what we know, who is your current finals matchup?
I'm going to go Phoenix-Milwaukee. It's pretty chalk. Okay. Yeah, that's where I'm going. I was pretty high on Philly after the trade, but it hasn't been where I thought it would be. And I knew Harden may have not be 100% or he wasn't playing necessarily that well. I just thought he would kind of snap out of it a little bit more. And so for a while I had Phoenix-Philly, but now I just don't believe mm-hmm. in that anymore.
Yeah, I wish I had like a super hot take to throw out here, but I'm with you. I'm going Phoenix-Milwaukee as well. I continue to think that Milwaukee is the safest bet in the Eastern Conference. I think there's a case to be made that in any singular series, you know, Brooklyn, Miami, Boston, maybe even Philly, if they play as well as they can and the Bucks play as well as they can, there's maybe other teams that have a slightly higher ceiling. But I think if you play out each of those series like 100 times, Milwaukee wins each of them the most often. So to me, that's what makes them the safest. I don't know if you caught that article by Eric Name of The Athletic on Drew Holiday's defense last night. I read it before bed and it took me a long time. There's these like really detailed videos. He actually sat down with Drew Holiday and had him like walk him through how he plays defense. And like, I'm like more sold than ever now on Drew Holiday locking up everybody throughout the playoffs. So I'm with you on Bucks Suns. And then let's pick these play-in games. And you know, one of them, Cavs Nets is going to start in like an hour and a half. So we'll do this for posterity, but we'll just go straight up. Cavs Nets. Don't worry about the spread.
Nets.
Okay. I'm with you on that. I think the Cavs actually keep it close. I think this is going to be a game well into the second half, but as we've seen the Nets do a few times lately, you know, they were tied with the Pacers or actually trailing the Pacers, I think late in the third quarter the other day and ended up winning that one fairly easily. I think we kind of see that type of game flow. And then the later game tonight, Clippers at Timberwolves. And keep in mind, the Clippers will not have Luke Kennard for this game. He did not travel to Minnesota.
I think I'm actually taking the Clippers here.
It's the Ty Lue coaching thing. I think he's. Yep. I think if you're talking about like if you're the Clippers, you know exactly what the Wolves are going to do. 100%. You know exactly like the game plan for them, what they're going to do on offense and defense. Mm-hmm. If you're Minnesota, you have no idea what you're about to see from Ty Lue and the Clippers, who have Paul George back. And I think in a one-game scenario with teams that are pretty close to even, mm-hmm. I would just rather take the wild card. the team where it's like they're going to come out and try something that the other team's never seen and only has a quarter. They have a quarter or a half to adjust to, basically.
Yeah, I'm on the Clippers as well. I put that in our best bets, I believe, earlier today. And it says a lot to me that Minnesota's at home for this game. I don't think it's a hot take to say Minnesota's the more talented team, even if the Clippers maybe have the best player in a healthy Paul George. But T-Wolves -3. I mean, that's essentially close to a pick'em, you know, on a neutral court. So I think there is some momentum in favor of the Clippers in this game. I think Chris Finch is a good coach, but I think Ty Lue is bordering on great coach in terms of strategy. And despite, I think, Minnesota having the better roster, I'm with you. I think the Clippers are probably the safest choice. I would actually make a similar argument to the one I just made in favor of Milwaukee, where, like, if Minnesota plays its best and the Clippers play their best, I think Minnesota wins because of the weapons that they have. But, you know, Anthony Edwards is, at this point, it's like he'll play amazing 1 out of 4 games, and another 1 out of those 4, he's going to be really bad. You can kind of say the same thing about D'Angelo Russell. Malik Beasley, super streaky. Like, there's a lot of those guys that you like individually, but the consistency just hasn't been there. And you know, not that either of these teams have like a decorated playoff pedigree to fall back on, but it just feels like to me, like the Clippers are the more veteran team, the team that I feel more comfortable saying that they'll have a competent game tonight, whereas there's a lower floor with Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota's a team where it's like, if you're going to bet Minnesota to win, you may as well just bet Anthony Edwards to also have 30 points and just parlay that.
Right. I mean, just the way that they've played offense. I mean, they're what, the number one offense in the league, I think, since New Year's Day. They've kind of turned into like the new Hornets in some ways, and they're a little bit better defensively than Charlotte is, but they want to win games 137 to 129. And, you know, I think the Clippers want to do the exact opposite. So it's going to be a really interesting contrast in styles.
100%.
All right, man. Looking forward to watching these games. We're about exactly an hour and a half away from Cavs Nets. That's going to be a fun one. And then again, Clippers Timberwolves tonight. We got Hornets and Hawks on Wednesday, Spurs and Pelicans, the late game on Wednesday. We will be back later this week to recap those games and, you know, hopefully have a little better feel for how this field is taking shape.